And I lived in Nepal for 3 months, and experiencing that for 3 months was amazing. So coming here and sharing for, what, like 30 minutes? It's crazy to put all that into 30 minutes. But I was praying about it, and yeah, there was so much that God did, because I did an SBS. I mean, I did a DTS with YWAM, which is 6 months, 3 months lecture, 3 months outreach. And the lecture phase, we have people come in every week sharing kind of different topics, and so we learn so much. And I've heard people say that it's like trying to drink out of a fire hose. It's so much information at one time. And, like, you could hear, everyone's dealing with something, you know, and we'll get something out of the speaker that he could have talked about it for 5 minutes, and it hit you, and you knew that that's what God wanted you to really hear. So I really felt like I should share kind of, at first, what God was doing in lecture phase for me, because I look back at it now, and it was like he was preparing my heart for what I was going to be doing in Nepal. The first thing was healings. We kind of talked about in like the 3 months of lecture phase. And that was just hard to wrap my head around, just the idea of healings. Because just think in a Western worldview of, I have to understand it to believe it. I have to be able to define it or something like that. And one of the main heart, I think, of YWAM is to create a hunger in people and to really, like, expect that God is the God of the Bible. And that means that he, the things that he did in the Bible, he's doing and can do now. So just seeing, like, hearing that, was, I don't know, just very new to me. And I always thought that it was, like, ignorant to think that that would happen or something like that. But I just think it's now I look at it and see that how ignorant of me to think that someone's not greater than I am, you know? And so I just, like, was really wrestling with a lot of doubt on the subject. And I kind of always thought that, like, doubt was really bad, that you couldn't, like, see miracles happen if you had doubt, because he wasn't going to move, you know, there. But realizing that doubt is okay, and to be, to just have your heart posture just saying yes, even in your doubt, because you're not going to understand it. Like, no matter how many times you think about it, it's not going to make sense. So, yeah, that was huge, just in lecture phase. I was thinking about it all the time. And the other thing was, understanding God's love. I know that's probably a fairly typical thing, but for me it was just, it was so vast, and I didn't even know where to begin to fathom his love, because I was going to go on the other side of the world to go tell people about his love, but I didn't even understand it. And I felt like I had to understand it. And I think God really knew who I was and knew that I wouldn't really be able to accept it or understand it, just showing me, like, his love for me. But I started just asking him to know his love, and slowly he would just give me this overwhelming love for the people in Nepal. And through that, I was, like, able to realize how much he loved me, just even giving me that love for these people, you know, or allowing me to go on the other side of the world and, like, meet these people was amazing. So yeah, and that was just huge. And I think it was like 2 months into the lecture phase that we met people that were moving to Nepal. So they were sharing stories about street kids, and right away I was like, it just triggered something in my heart. And I just remember thinking about it every day. He would just give me these, like, just this love for these kids that I've never met, and just his heart and how much he loved these kids that have no home, they have no families, they have nothing, literally, like, nothing. So yeah, that was huge, just how much he was preparing my heart in lecture phase. And just creating my heart to be like sensitive to his voice. And then going into Nepal, the first few weeks were really rough for our team. We had 12 people on our team, and we hear all these things in lecture phase. You hear all this stuff. You're so excited. You're like, I'm actually going to do this time. I'm going to love people. And then you get there, and you have no water ever, ever. You're always dirty. And, you know, that things are going to come up. You're living with 12 people in this little tiny house. So, it was just interesting seeing us kind of like being there and being like, okay, now where do we start? Just getting really overwhelmed with, okay, this huge country and everyone's Buddhist or Hindu. And just there is a darkness there, for sure. And I thought that was crazy. I'd heard people say how dark it was. I also heard people say that it was like an open heaven because there were so many miracles going on there. So I just didn't know what to expect, and just being in that, we came when it was one of the biggest Hindu festivals, which is Desai. So there's like a festival. Every week is different. I could never keep up. There's always something. So it's literally like Old Testament times. You'll see goats lined up for miles and miles that they're just going to butcher, and just crazy ritualistic things. They have one night where they celebrate young girls and they dance around the street, and then guys throw money at them. So it's just like crazy stuff, and just really overwhelming. And I remember just getting kind of caught, like, okay, what do I do now? I have this love for these kids, but I don't know. Can you really kind of make a difference, I guess? And I think God really used that place of distraction to kind of push me to just go. It's like, you know where to go. You could go anywhere. You could just go down the street, you know? And so one night, we were at our house, and we had a few hours before dinner there. And so I was just sitting in the room, and all of a sudden I was just like, I need to go to Temel, which is, it's kind of the touristy part of Kathmandu. There's a lot of shops, just a lot of people, a lot of street kids, a lot of vendor type things. And so I just got, and no one in our team wanted to go, so I was like, okay, should I still go? And so I just went and hopped in a taxi, went down to Temel, and I was just hoping that, okay, what if I get there and there's no street kids? That was a dumb thought because there's always street kids. I literally get out of the taxi and there's a bunch of kids just sitting on the ground, and the street boys there, like most places, but they're called glue boys, but so they sniff glue. And a lot of them are 18, 19, 20, and they look like they're 12, 11, you know, kind of that age. And they're all normally a part of gangs, so they have cuts all over their body because the person with the most cuts kind of is like top dog, the toughest. So I was like, okay, what do I do? So I just start talking to them. They don't know a whole lot of English, but you can kind of get words out, and and so there was a pharmacy like literally a few doors down, and I was like, okay, let's clean cuts. So for an hour there's probably, I don't know, 15 kids, and I just start cleaning cuts, and even just a paper cut there, because it's so dirty, it's going to get infected, you know, they don't know how to treat it, so just small things are huge. I ended up meeting this old man that he was the owner of the pharmacy. The sweetest guy, and he just comes up to me like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? You know, you're American, you don't do this, why are you doing this? And we start talking while I'm, you know, cleaning cuts, and he starts just handing me stuff, and he's like, oh, take it free, free, free. And so I was like, okay. And basically for every night, that I was there after that point, I just went down to Tamil every night and created a friendship with the guy that owned the pharmacy. And the pharmacy was a part of another store, and I ended up knowing that guy. And so just one simple, like just going, really, I ended up knowing so many people. People ask you all the time, why are you doing this? And you start talking to them. And, yeah, so it was just amazing. Every night, God just provided so many amazing things, just his provision, too, just protection over me, because a lot of times I was going by myself, which I wasn't supposed to do, but it was a real bad neighborhood. So there's countless times where you're like, I don't even know how I'm in this taxi safe right now. But I don't know, it was just this peace that came over me every single time, like I was just supposed to do it. One of the times that I was there, in the pharmacy cleaning cuts, this guy comes up to me and starts talking to me like, why are you doing this? And his name was CP. He turned out to be a friend that I had the whole time I was there. He started talking to me like, this doesn't make sense, right? Again, kind of the typical, why are you talking to them? So we go get Dalabat after we clean it, because I would always go have dinner with the kids every time I'd clean the cuts. And we found this little shack of a place in one of the alleys, and so we go and have dinner. And he started talking to me like, you know, they're old enough to have a job. They should have jobs. You know, why? That's not necessary, you know. And I was like, I know, but just ask them their story, you know. Because with the caste system there, they honestly, to be real about it, they treat them like dogs. You'll see street dogs all over the place, and they treat them the same way as they treat the kids. There's exactly the same. It's crazy. And so he starts asking the boys, you know, what's your story kind of thing. And they start sharing just that, you know, that their parents always abused them. You know, it was always abuse, always, you know, their parents died. They have no one. And so this is their family kind of thing. And one of the kids, BJ, he changes his name like every few months because he can't remember it. So honestly, from what I've heard, some of the guys, because a lot of the vendors have seen these kids grow up. So they've said, you know, I'm pretty sure that he just got really high one day and doesn't even know. He probably has a family somewhere, but he just doesn't remember where they are, and they didn't come looking for him because it's one less person to feed kind of thing. So that was a lot of their stories. So, yeah, I just built this relationship with CP, and he ended up kind of – it was crazy to see just him go from, okay, why are you helping these guys, to – right after dinner, we were talking, and he was like, I think I know where some of them hang out. Like, maybe we'll meet tomorrow night, and we can go, like, I'll have them meet you, and we'll go clean their cuts, or let's have dinner with them. And he would just, every single night, bring me people, like, bring me these kids. And he was always in Tamil, so he was always the guy that I would look for, and he became this person that literally would just tell me all about the street kids every single day. And, so this, he was telling me probably later on, probably the end of the time that I was there, he was sharing to me about, because he was very educated in different religions. He knew pretty much every single religion. And he would just talk to me about how, you know, they're not true, just over and over, over some tea, and we would just chat kind of thing. And then he started sharing a story about how some Americans came and they were talking about Jesus. They ended up like abusing him when he was a little kid. So I'm just seeing how much pain and hurt from that. And so we just kept on talking, and just being able to have so much trust that he would trust me to share that was amazing. The kids could never pronounce my name, so they would call me Chicken. So So it was hilarious. But he was like, no, we need a new name for you. And so he called me Maya. And that means love in Nepali. And he was like telling me just over all the religions, like, there's never any love there. There's never any love. But like, you have love and I don't know why, you know. And it just made me like think back to like lecture phase, how honestly I can tell you that changed me so much, because there's so, like, I've gone to so many countries and you can go wherever just trying to help people, but if you're doing it kind of in your own strength, you're going to burn out so quick. You know, being in a country for 3 months is different than a few weeks, you know. You burn out very quickly, and if you don't have that backing it up and having it not be you and not your love, but his love, that, like, it's just amazing, you know, just seeing that and seeing how people recognize that. And I knew that it wasn't me, because I would have, you know, because the kids, honestly, like, they're rough kids, you know. Most people don't trust them, and they're going to, you know, they're going to try to rob you. They're going to, you know what I mean? But you just have to know that and kind of come into it like, okay, but how can I love you that you can accept it? So if you can't accept it that way, I'm going to love you a different way. And just him seeing that was just amazing. So, so that was my name that everyone called me on the street. And I would have people come up to me that would be like, oh, you're Maya. And I'd be like, I've never met you in my life. And so it just, it honestly, by the time that I left, I had so many friends there. That in itself, there was times again where it wouldn't be the safest place to be at night, but I knew the cops, like, and they ended up like removing some guy that I never told them to remove, but they were just protecting me. And honestly, it was all through the kids. I met every single person through the kids. I wasn't like I was going around trying to find people to meet, you know. It was, the kids were always leading me to their friends, and then it just happened that way. I can honestly say that, you know, I grew up in church, and it's amazing, but I've never seen God's heart more than I have sitting in a pile of garbage with some kids, you know, and just talking about life, you know, and what they want to be when they grow up. And they want to be, you know, they want to be businessmen, they want to be lawyers, they want to do all this stuff. So, that was just amazing. I could go into so much detail with that. But every Friday night, we would go into Tamil with the Iris ministry that we were working with. And we would meet, there's this long road that where the taxis kind of stop, and then it goes into where there's shops and everything and all these crazy roads, and we would meet in the middle of it. And we would pray all together and just ask God to give us little clues. It was just so weird at first. I was like, okay, no, this is weird. So as you can tell, I was like, it's just in so much doubt, and God used me, which was amazing. But we would just pray about things, and one girl would be like, I get the color green. I get the color, or I get this person standing by this bench. And it all, like, they found this place exactly how the clues were. It was weird. And so that night, the first time I was there, I got a rickshaw driver, street kid, a corner, and a jewelry shop. And that's, I mean, not, maybe not all together, but that's all over Tamil. So I was like, oh yeah, that doesn't make sense. That's just random stuff. And my leader knew me pretty well and said that he got a rickshaw driver. And we would kind of divide up into like things, similar things. And rickshaw driver and drug dealer. So that's what he got. And so he was like, Tegan, I think you should come with me. And so we start walking, and we pass a few different rickshaw drivers, and we get to this corner, and we start talking to this rickshaw driver. And, we start talking to him for 4 hours, just standing on the side of the road. And he was the sweetest guy. And we were just kind of sharing life stories. And one of my friends that was there had a word of wisdom for him, just like his life and what he was going through with his family, and shared it. And so we were at this point where it's like 4 hours in, so we're just like, okay, God, do something. I don't know. And this street kid, this is Minaj, that kid, walks up to Chris Dirks, my leader, and I guess they knew each other from a few days ago. This kid got run over by a motorcycle, and his foot was huge, swollen, crazy, in pain, and they prayed over it, and it was completely healed, and he walks up to us with no limp at all, completely high. And you could really barely talk to him. But he just comes up to us and was like, hi. And so we're kind of sharing with the rickshaw driver, like, this is what his story is. We saw him the other day. This is what happened. And so we were just like, well, why don't we just pray that he, like, is clear of that, you know, just has a clear mind, that we can talk to him. And so we start praying. And the rickshaw driver starts, like, praying as well. And so we're in the middle of this little street just praying over this kid. And I ended up knowing this kid the whole time after that. Every night I would see him. And I'd never seen him that clear of, you know, just being able to talk clearly. Because a lot of these kids, even if they're not high, just because their brain is screwed up now, you know, that they can't say things correctly all the time. So yeah, that was just amazing, and we just go all together and go get Dalabat and then talk some more. And so it was just amazing. I go back the next day because everything was closed, and I went back to that same spot to see, okay, maybe what if God was actually really speaking to me. And it's on a corner in front of this huge jewelry shop with a rickshaw driver and a street kid. So I was like, okay. another night I was with some of the kids going to get Dalabat, the street kids. And it was really cold that night. So we were walking back, and they wanted coats, which they never asked for anything. They really honestly never asked for anything other than food. And I was like, okay, most people tell you don't get them anything. You know, if you get them a Coke, you got to open it up. Why is they going to sell it for glue? But I went to one of my friends that owned a shop, and we got them all coats. And I remember just thinking, again, like, if they don't accept it this way, I'll just love them a different way. And I would have never been like that before, you know, lecture phase. I would have been like, okay, that's it. And so we get out of the shop, and I'm not even kidding, 5 seconds later, I see them selling it to this guy. And I'm kind of standing there and looking at the guy. And there's very few people I've ever felt like a lot of darkness over them. And I just felt this darkness over this guy, and I was just like, I don't want to ever talk to him again, like, ever. And I started just kind of staring a little bit more, like, really? That's what they're going to do? And then I remembered, you know, God has literally used these kids to every single person that they've led me to. It's been an amazing thing that God has been doing. And I'm standing there, and all of a sudden I was just like, I need to talk to this guy. My, like, attitude totally shifted. I was like, I, like, need to talk to this guy. I had to get back to the house, so I couldn't talk to him right away. And so the next day was a Friday night, and I'd been thinking about this guy all day. And we, for some weird reason, out of all the weeks that we were there, that we met in the middle of Temel, we met by the taxis instead this night. And we were praying again and just kind of dividing up into, like, things. And I said that I just see this guy's face. And I never, like, told you this, but, like, he had shaved head here, and then hair coming, like, all the way around, like Martin Luther. And it was, like, bleached. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. But you could see him coming a mile away. And so it was clear in my head, you know, just what he looks like. And I was like, I have to talk to this guy. And so we divide up, and I'm not even kidding, maybe 4 steps away, I look up, and he's walking straight toward us. And I'd never seen this guy before that other night. And so we talked to him, and we were asking him, like, do you have any pain? Do you have anything? And he, like, turns open his lip. And there's this huge sore in his lip, and it was so gross, but it was bright red, just infected. And we start praying over it, and we're having it open the whole time, and it's completely gone. It was, like, so weird. And then he just starts walking back, and you can't explain that. I don't care how many times you think about it, you can't explain that. And your mind is going to try to tell you, oh, that didn't really happen. But, like, you saw it. You saw it disappear completely. And another time, a Friday night, we were in the middle again, and we were praying about what we should do. And we all get signs of, like, where we're at right there. And it had been a long night. We had done other stuff in Tamil, so we were like, well, we'll just go back, I guess. And so we start walking back. We go on the other side of the street. And there's 2 guys leaning up against this wall, and one of the guys with Iris sits talking to him and says, like, just gets this word of knowledge that he has back pain. And so the guy lifts up his shirt, and there's this huge brace on his back. And this guy has a suit on. He ends up being a lawyer we didn't know about, but, like, we start praying over him, and he's completely healed. And you could just tell. I mean, he was in total shock. He ended up following us around for 2 hours when we were down in Tamil, just telling people, just like, what the heck? And it was just mind-blowing. There was another time that I was walking past this temple, and there's temples everywhere. But this one temple that I normally walk past, and for some reason, I was like, I should pray over the temple. I don't know why. There's literally, when you walk into the temple, you feel like just this heaviness. I'm not even kidding. I've never felt anything like that. And for some reason, even though you know it's, like, stupid to have fear, but you have this fear. And so I just start praying. And I just remember clearly knowing, like, what to pray. And it was like, God, I just pray that you break this foundation that's here. I just pray that the foundations are broken. And it was, you know, there was no more fear. There was no more, like, heaviness. And I just walked out, you know. And the next day, I think it was, walked back to the same temple. And I don't know if there was a pipe break or something, because they had to tear up all the gravel and all the cement. And they're just, like, walking by, like, okay. Okay, great. That's awesome. So I don't know what that was about, but I was just like, okay, cool. I just thought it was hilarious. But there's also, we were praying by these temples, and another set of temples. I think it's in Durbar Square. Super popular place. There's tourists everywhere. And I don't know all the details, but I know that this girl, they have this girl live in one of the houses, and they have her there until she hits puberty. And until that time, they can cast demons into her. They can do whatever they want to her. And then they just throw her out on the streets. So in the middle of all these touristy things, you have that, and so there's a lot of people that live in the temple area. A lot of people that are disabled live there all the time, and so we were praying over people. And then I felt like that something about a flag, and I remember telling someone, so if you see a flag, I was thinking like a little tiny flag, I don't know. And literally, this guy walks up with a flag, of the Nepali flag, that's about 2 stories tall, just walking around with it. I'm like, what? That's so weird. And so he was just walking back and forth, and we were praying over this lady, and he was still there. So we walk over, and we just start talking to him, like, I don't know, but God just told us to come talk to you. And he was just amazed by that. He was like, I was going to leave 10 minutes ago. I always leave at the same time every single day. And I stayed here 10 minutes later. I don't know why. And, you know, he was a businessman, and he was just shocked that someone, you know, that really cared enough to go tell him that and just talk to him. Yeah, so that was, like, weird stuff that, I mean, again, it goes back to, like, you're never going to understand that. But another thing, another one of the holiest sites is Pashupati. It's where they have a hospice there, and then they have this place where they burn the bodies and then put the ash in the river. And it's I don't know all the details, but it has something to do with, I don't know, it's a holy site, so I think, I don't know all the details, but it's something huge that everyone wants to be, you know, there, wants to be in the hospice. And so you see tourists everywhere. I think in the video there is one of the man's faces. He had glasses on and paint all over his face. They actually have white stuff all over their body, which is ash that they put on their body. And they're Saudi. They're holy men, and they live there. And so you'll see tourists, like, taking pictures with them and giving them money, and that's a thing. And so we'd come there. The Iris Ministry would always come there pretty much every week and talk to these guys. So we were there, and I guess they have horrible, horrible nightmares every single night because they live there. And, I mean, who wouldn't? And every time that we, like, pray over them, they have this peace that they drag you over to pray over them. And it's just crazy, the sweetest guys. But there was, I'm just naming off all these different things, and this is literally not even a handful of all the things that happened. But in the prayer house with Iris Ministry, they brought in this lady that she had two kids. And her husband tried to kill her countless times. And so she was just, I'd never hear her, like, speak anything. She would just stand there and stare. No emotion at all. Would never touch her kids. And so they took her in. And she was living there probably 2 months into while we were staying there. And within maybe 4 weeks, she was laughing, like, she had so much life. I've never seen someone just switch like that. Would just take care of the kids in the children's home. Was so sweet, would come up to you and hug you, like, where she would just sit in a corner before and just stare. And, I mean, it was just amazing to see that. I mean, there's just so many miracles that I could go on and on. One of the girls that was actually on our team had celiac disease, and so she was so worried that coming to Nepal, we had tons of parasites, so, I mean, you're going to get sick, and so she was so worried that she wouldn't be able to eat anything, that she'd be sick the whole time, and the first 2 weeks she was sick, and she was going to go home, actually, and she actually just started eating gluten. She's completely healed. It's crazy. And even in Hawaii, like, she'd eat all this gluten. So, I mean, we're just in awe of that. And again, like, all these amazing things, even talking about it, even in that moment, you still have a little bit of doubt where you're like, oh, okay, yeah, it's okay. And then you would start realizing how many amazing things happen. But I don't know. I guess with all that being said about all the miracles, and like I said, that's just a handful. But I really, really felt when I was praying about, like, what to share, was just how relational God is. Because the miracles were great. I mean, you would honestly, there's also going to be people that are faking your miracles too. And you're going to have that where it's like, oh, okay, that's not real. And so there's going to be that too. But he's so relational that what was the more of a miracle, I think, was just seeing how much that person just needed someone to go talk to them. And just going and talking to them was the real miracle. Just like letting them know that they're not invisible, especially in a country where, I mean, most of the population is treated like dirt. So those were some of the street kids. and just like that was what blew me away when I was thinking about how could I like describe 3 months in Nepal, but just showing how much he cares about every single person. And like I said, the street kids would show me every single person. But it was literally like God was just telling me, like, hey, I have this, you have to meet this other person. Like, you just have to. I know you'll love him as much as I do. And that was literally what it was like. And it was so simple. Amazing things happened, but honestly, I didn't do anything. I went in a taxi. That's basically all I did. And amazing things happened just through that. And it, like I said, it was so simple. So, and I mean, like, that's literally the biggest thing that I really learned is just how important it is to just, like, speak truth into people's lives. Because, like, the world is dying to have truth, you know? And just being kind to someone is huge. And you get it back in the U.S., and it's, honestly, it's so much harder. It's just so much harder. Because you would think that everyone would be irritated because they don't have water in another country. Like, you get used to it. I can shower in this much water and, like, a pro. You know? So, I mean, like, you get very used to it, you know. The first few weeks, you're so afraid of anything that you can eat. The next week, you're eating stuff on the street. You know, you don't care. But coming back in the U.S., it's crazy. I even felt worse. It's like, I'm getting upset about this. The dumbest things. You know, like someone cuts me off in traffic and I'm like, seriously? You know? And like, those are the little things that are just like, we get so frustrated with, and it's so hard to just love people and speak truth into their lives, you know? I don't know. I really felt like that's what I was supposed to share, just how relational he is and how much he cares. And if your heart posture literally is just a little bit towards him, and you're just a little bit sensitive to his voice, he's going to tell you things, and he's going to, like, want you to be involved, and it's going to change your life. Like, I'm not even kidding. Here, even, you know? So, yeah, that's basically what I want to say. So, yeah, that's Nepal. But do you guys have any questions? Because I would love to answer them if I know them. Yes. Right.
Or the vendors, mm-hmm. saying, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
What would you tell them, and would it be different depending on who was asking you?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, everyone's different too. You'll have some people who will just blurt out, like, Jesus loves you, you know, which I'm not like that, you know. Everyone's so different, and honestly, some people, I was actually having tea with a Buddhist monk at Pashupati, and the whole time, I'd never felt like I needed to talk about Jesus more than I had, but I would just bring him up randomly, and I was like, this is not me, and I felt like that's what God wanted me to say. Other times, it's, hi, let's talk about your family. You know, do you have any kids? You know, I mean, it really depends, I think, honestly, on what you feel.
Why are you doing this? That kind of a question.
Right, so, just like I love these kids, I would just honestly say I love these kids. And sometimes it would be like, well, I'm a Christian, this and this. But not all the time, honestly. Sometimes I would just say, I love these kids. And then I would say, why? That God really put this in my heart for that, you know? So it's honestly very different. But I tried as much as possible to go sit down and have tea with someone before I just blurted out Jesus. But that's just me. So, yeah.
Deacon, on months ago that you may observe or your folks may observe. And could you, if there are any, could you describe what they were?
I mean, there's a lot of things I feel like. Honestly, there's a lot more confidence in your faith, I think, too. Because even though I'll still have times where I'm like, was that real? Was that miracle real? You know, I still doubt all the time. But I think just being okay and not letting that kind of like paralyze me, you know? And just being okay with that and being like, okay, let's just, you know, being just saying yes in that. That's the biggest, honestly, the biggest thing. And honestly, being okay with just going up to someone and it's okay if they think you're weird. Like, but I mean, like, just because I've seen God show up in so many people's lives and things that I thought were just random things that I came up with. And they weren't. And also, honestly, I don't know, that was just huge for me. There was one time that this, I'd heard people say that this happened to them where they would feel physical pain that was not their own, but like God was telling them to ask them if you have physical pain. And I kind of kept that in the back of my mind. And one of the nights in this taxi, I just felt this like really like bad pain in my leg. And I just knew right away. I'd never, honestly never thought about what that person said. But I just remember thinking about what they said about how that could mean that it's something to do with that person driving the taxi. And so I asked the guy, and he had, like, horrible pain in his left leg. And so, I don't know, just being, like, very confident in that and just doing and going, you know, but and knowing that God's going to show up kind of thing. Yeah.
Comfort come into you, the comfort just that God put all of the, you know, made you so relaxed that it just came out. It was nothing hard to.
No, it was so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable. I mean, honestly, the majority of the time it was so uncomfortable. But I think that's what, I guess what I'm trying to say is that it had nothing to do with me and it had nothing to do with our group there at all. Because we didn't even know what we were talking about half the time, like, honestly. So, I mean, just being honest about that. So, no, it wasn't comfortable. Yeah?
You said earlier that you just had a peace.
Mm-hmm.
Just a great peace.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, and just because there was a lot of, especially at night, because I would be down there at, like, 1 o'clock at in the morning or whatever, you know. So there's just a lot of there's just a lot of stuff that happens down there. But I just had this huge peace that God was going to protect me, and he literally did. I mean, there's so many times that it's really close calls, but I actually had to get up at 6, so I'd get back at around 3. So. But the kids, honestly, they worked. Some of the kids weren't glue boys, they were garbage boys, and they had jobs and they were amazing kids. But they worked till around 3 and then got up at around 5 to go to school, to walk there, you know. So when you have that, it's a lot easier to get up. I mean, a little bit, not a whole lot, but it's a little bit easier. But yeah, there was actually this one time I forgot that I had become really good friends with this guy. Every single night I would see him and we'd kind of talk. And it ended up that he owned a dance bar, which is like a strip club. And he ended up inviting me in. And a lot of times they'll get mad if you're in there and talking to the girls. But he wanted me to talk to the girls. So like a bunch of our girls went in and talked. And I knew actually a few people that owned dance bars, so just because of simple friendship with the kids then allowed me to know him and then open that door, which was huge. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many things, but yeah. Yeah, wish I was sleeping. No, there is, Iris Ministries had a banquet house some days, which was a homeless ministry where we would feed homeless people. Then we had a lot of free days, honestly, but we would end up going and just do random things that we felt called to do. There's a lot of, and then there's a lot of things with Iris where we go down to slum ministry and see them. It was pretty random. There was a few weeks where we had a bunch of women, what do you call it, a conference for people that have been abused, and we helped with that. So it was all, like, very different, but honestly, there's, like, a huge community there, so every different minute, like, there's a bunch of different ministries. There's Beauty for Ashes, which they take in girls from the dance bars, and they teach them how to make jewelry, and so you will work with them, and it's, like, whatever's needed, and they all know each other, so they just call us. We'll go over there. So it's pretty random, but, yeah. We did, yeah. Iris has, I mean, there is a YWAM base in Nepal, but we didn't stay there. We stayed at the Iris guest house, and they've worked with YWAM. So, and there was another team from YWAM with a different school that they weren't at the base either. They worked with another ministry, so.
Do they share Christ at all with these people when they get opportunity? Is that
yeah. No, there's freedom. You can. They're actually very, very open to it. Very open. So, yeah. And some. Yeah, we did see a lot. I don't know the numbers, but, we did. Yeah, was there something I was going to say? Yeah. I'll just try to remember that. Yeah, any more questions? Some of them were Christians. Some of them, one of the guys with Iris, he had actually, this crazy guy, he's insane basically, but he actually lived with the street kids for the longest time, went to work with them, you know, ended up getting really sick, but he ended up just becoming really good friends with these boys, and that's how they were saved. Yeah. But they were the garbage boys, so they had jobs, and they were going to school. What I was going to say is that you couldn't really say that you were a missionary or a Christian. Try to avoid that, especially in certain areas. So, yeah.
Does everybody go to school? Is the school open to all these kids? Or?
I actually don't know. I know that not everyone goes. I think you have to pay for it, I'm pretty sure. I don't think there's, like, public schools. But a lot of them have sponsors, some of them. Yeah. So. Thanks. Cheers.
All right, there you go.